Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2012 Home Education Conference held in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Several months ago, my son-in-law deployed overseas for a year, leaving behind my daughter and their four little girls. And I went to the deployment ceremony with them to see them off. And my little six-year-old granddaughter, Kaylee, was especially dreading the moment because she adores her daddy and she could not imagine life without him for a year. When it came time for him to leave, she put her arms around him. She hugged him for a really, really long time. And then when it was time for him to go, the tears that she had fought so hard to hold back finally broke free, and she started to sob, and sob like I thought her little heart would break. So I watched her for a few moments, and then I knelt down on the ground next to her, and I put my arm around her. And I whispered a little story into her ear. I told her of another little girl whose daddy had to go off to war. And this little girl felt so sad because she missed him so much and she loved him and she didn't know what she was going to do. But then she thought about how proud she was of her daddy, that he was so brave, that he was a good man. In fact, she was so proud of him. Everywhere she went, she told people, "My daddy's a soldier." And then one day her daddy came home and he hugged her and she was so happy. That was all there was to the story. But as I told her the story, she wiped the tears from her face and she stood up tall and waved at the bus until he was out of sight. And then almost instinctively, when we got home, she got some pieces of paper together and stapled them and worked the story of the day through pictures, telling the story through pictures. And she told me I could share this little book with her. Me and My Daddy, written by Kaylee, and you can see that the wind was blowing her hair. She remembers the wind was blowing her hair, and she has the little necklace on that her dad gave to her to remind her of him. And down at the bottom, you can see that she specified this is a true book. When it was time for them to leave, she remembers both of them had tears on their faces. And when he got on the bus, this is Dad's seat. Dad was sitting right here on the bus, and it had started to rain, and then the clouds were low in the sky. And then the bus drove off with the headlights on. But she and her two little sisters were going to dress up as three little witches for the Halloween party that night, and the baby was going to be a little black cat. It was her way of saying, life goes on. And I watched her over the next few days as we interacted with people that she would find a chance to say, you know what, my dad's a soldier. And people were always so warm and gracious that pretty soon she didn't need to say it anymore. This is the power of a story. Stories help us to sort through raw emotion and make sense of life. Stories are what help us to see clearly. Stories are the means by which we carry information from our minds, information and ideas from our minds into our hearts, where our hearts can make sense of things. If you tell your child 2 + 2 = 4, that has no meaning to it. But if you connect it to a story, if you have 2 apples and I give you 2 more apples, how many apples will you have? Suddenly that becomes clear. You can understand that. Most of the time in school is spent trying to get information to stick. Textbooks are usually full of information that has been completely stripped of the stories, which is why you don't curl up in front of the fire with a good textbook. Most of the time, like I said, in school is spent trying to get information to stick. But trying to get information to be retained by the mind that the heart doesn't care about, it's like pouring water over a duck's back. It just rolls off. But if you first engage, inspire, and ignite the heart, you replace those duck feathers with a sponge that you are suddenly soaking up the information and holding on to it. For instance, when I learned about the Civil War from my textbooks, I didn't care about any of the facts or information, but after I read Gone with the Wind, suddenly those facts have relevance, and I held on to them. The function of story is to engage the heart and awaken feeling. We operate our lives from the stories that our heart believes. For instance, if on the first day of school you walk on the playground and all the kids come running up to you and want to wear the same shoes you're wearing because you're so cool, and everybody wants you to be, picks you first to be on their team, and the teacher can't stop gushing about how brilliant you are, those are all stories that go into your story reservoir. If, on the other hand, on your first day of school, you walk on the playground and all the kids call you Four Eyes, and not only does nobody want you for their team, when you're on their team, they moan and groan that they're stuck with you, and the teacher covers your paper with red, those are also stories that go into that story reservoir. And how excited you are to get up to go to school when the alarm goes off is going to be entirely dependent upon which stories you're operating from. If you happen to be the second child, no matter how much your parent or your mother or your teacher may reason with your mind and tell you about why you should be enjoying school and why it's important to be there, that mind stuff isn't going to be able to override that story that's playing out in your heart. Only another story can replace that which is taking place in your heart. Stories are what drive our actions. If it was our minds that drove our actions, we would all eat kale chips instead of chocolate chips. And the proverb does not say, as he thinketh, so is he. It says, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. So, if it's our heart that sees clearly, and it's our heart that drive our actions, and it's stories that carry ideas and information into our hearts, we can begin to see why stories are one of the most powerful forces on the earth. In fact, if you think about it, every conflict in the world can be traced back to somebody's belief in a story. Propaganda and gossip is storytelling gone bad. And it has brought down nations, and it has ruined individual lives. That's how powerful stories are. When Jesus was on the earth, he only had 3 years of an earthly ministry, and he chose to spend that time telling stories of lost sheep and returning prodigal sons and good Samaritans, of friends laying down lives for friends, and of a kingdom not of this earth where beauty, justice, and love ruled. And from that small body of stories, Christianity has spread throughout the world and has been a tremendous force of good, a source of peace and comfort for people's lives, and it all came from a small body of stories. My daughter said that a visiting professor came to BYU to do a forum a while ago, and he had been a therapist for many years, and he was very concerned that he noticed that with the children coming in, that children were having more serious bouts of depression at younger and younger ages. He was seeing 8 and 9 year olds that were suicidal. And he thought, what is happening? What is going on that our children are becoming so desperate so young? And he decided to go to the school, to the 9th grade, to see what they were reading. And so in visiting a 9th grade, they were reading the normal 9th grade fare, which is Romeo and Juliet and Lord of the Flies, not exactly two feel-good books. And he suggested to the teachers that they run an experiment. And for half of their classes, he told them to keep the normal, what they were reading. For the other half of the classes, he said to give them inspirational and uplifting literature to read, and then note if there was any difference between the two groups. And over the course of the next few months, the difference was remarkable. That those kids that had the uplifting, inspirational stories to draw from were more respectful of each other, were more responsible in their work. They were just overall happier students. The stories do make a difference. There was a certain man who had a friend that was a beekeeper. Upon visiting him one day, he found the friend in great despair. "I'm ruined," he said. "All of my honey is bitter." The man considered it for a moment, and then he suggested that they get up early the next morning and see if they could follow the swarm of bees to see what they were feeding on, which they did. And they found them out behind an old abandoned bottling factory, feeding on barrels of rotting, gooey, icky syrups that they were filling their little pollen sacks and flying back to the hives. And the man suggested, change what your bees are feeding on, and you'll change the quality of your honey. That is my message to you today. If you're concerned about the direction things are heading, then maybe the thing that we need to be focusing on more, what we need to be paying attention to, are what are the stories that are feeding the hearts of our children. I have given this a lot of thought. And in fact, several years ago, I had an idea of creating a small library of books for young people that would be filled with ideas that would give them great hope. It was going to be a library of hope. And I had no idea where I was going to start, but I just felt like this was a good thing to do because our kids need good things to feed on. And after not too much time, I discovered a wonderful golden era of children's literature between about the years 1880 to 1920. And if I could use one word to describe the writings of this time, it is inspired. These writers wrote stories for children that they wove so much wisdom into it for happy living. And it was in all the subjects. They wrote about history, biography, nature, science, art, and music. And I was so excited to republish and reprint this literature and get it into families' hands so you had these wonderful stories for your children. But I ran into a little problem. I discovered that a lot of kids are not reading so much anymore, especially old books without pictures. And what they do read, they want to be highly entertained, even shocked. You know, they're looking for the adrenaline rush. How could I begin to compete with DVDs and videos and iPods with these books? You know, how can you start to pull the kids down from their sugar high and get them back to a place where they can slow down and ponder and think and feel? And I don't know about you, but as I look at things going on in our world, we are entering challenging times. And I thought, our children need things to give them hope. I felt like I had a locked treasure chest and the key was missing. And so I started looking for this key. One day I was out of town visiting and I was heading out the door to go to dinner with my family. And I just had this nudge, this impression to go take just a minute and get on the computer and look at something. So I went downstairs and opened up the computer and got on Internet Archives where I spent a lot of my time. And I just said out loud, I have no idea what I'm looking for. And immediately, a key word came into my mind, and I entered it in, and a whole list of books came up that I started scrolling through. And as I looked through all these titles, there was one title that just jumped out at me. It's not a particularly exciting title. It was called The Use of Story in Religious Education by Margaret Eggleston, written in 1920. But I opened it up. And as I started to read, I realized that I had found the key that I was looking for. And before I went to bed that night, I discovered that 100 years ago, there was a revival in the ageless and beautiful art of storytelling among mothers and teachers of young children. They understood that storytelling is the first gateway to a child's heart, that it's been used throughout history, it works, and that it drives deeper into the heart than just reading. They understood that storytelling is the most effective way to lead children into books. And I've discovered this whole circle of storytelling friends who wrote books about how to tell stories, and they gave an abundance of stories to these mothers who formed story groups all over the country to practice the art of storytelling with their children. And as I thought about it, what followed is a generation that is marked by strong moral courage and self-sacrifice. We have even come to describe that generation as the greatest generation. Now, maybe that's just coincidence, but I don't think it is. And so I have been asking myself, what would happen if we restored the art of storytelling in our homes today? I believe that we will see a new generation of readers. We need our children to read because books are the greatest repository of stories. When our children read books, they begin to see life through 1,000 different eyes instead of the limited view of their own experience. We will see children who are wiser because they will be drawing from more experience of other lives. They will have greater empathy for others as they learn the different kind of stories that other people operate from. And we will see more dreamers as the possibilities of life is opened up to them. Our schools desperately try to teach our children how to read. And yet, despite the hundreds of millions of dollars spent in programs and methodologies, we still see our reading scores continue to plummet. And not only can Johnny still not read, he doesn't even want to read anymore. What these storytellers of 100 years ago understood, that you can't teach reading by starting with the mechanics. You have to prime the pump first. And you prime the pump by telling an abundance of stories. A lot of things are going on during that time when you're telling stories. You're getting children who are comfortable in the world of words. You're building up their vocabulary. They're learning to create images from words, which is critical to reading. When we give our little children books, we give them all the pictures. They don't have to create the images in their mind. But when you tell a story, a child begins to form their own images from words. As they listen to stories, they're developing the habit of concentration and focus. Our kids are losing the ability to sustain thought long enough to wrap their minds around an idea. We've got this Sesame Street-sized sound bites going at them all the time, and they need to be able to sustain thought. As they concentrate on a story, they are developing that ability. And as you look at the children of 100 years ago, while our kids are struggling to read Little Bear at age 6, at age 6, they were reading books like Don Quixote and Arabian Nights and loving it, and they were hungry to read more. I read of a school district in Utah, they threw away all their Charles Dickens books because they said the sentences were too long and the words were too big. That's scary. The most important thing that is happening as you tell stories is it makes our children hungry to get at more stories. And what the heart desires, it finds a way to achieve. As you tell stories, our children just seem to naturally learn how to read. At a recent presentation, I had a woman come up after, and she was so excited to confirm what I was saying. She said that when she was a little girl, her mother and her grandmother told her stories all the time. And she said, I have no idea when I learned how to read. I just started reading, and I wanted to read everything that I got my hands on. I find that evidence over and over. Some of you are shaking your heads. You know that that is a true principle. And I have seen it so much that I am truly becoming convinced that learning to read may be just as natural as learning to speak if we give the right environment for our kids. What will happen if we restore the art of storytelling in our homes? We will see a new generation filled with hope. Hope is what keeps us moving forward. It's the assurance that no matter how dismal something may be today, there are better things ahead. With the challenges that are ahead, we need to raise a generation whose hearts will not fail when things become difficult, who are able to focus on the possibilities ahead. And stories are able to do it. Their ability to maintain hope will be in direct proportion to how broad and deep their reservoir of stories is. For instance, I had given a presentation some time ago. And when I came home, I was so discouraged because I felt like I hadn't delivered the message that I wanted to give. And some people love to be up talking to people. I am not one of those people. So when I got home, I was so frustrated. And I just wanted to curl up in the corner and just make the world go away. And I just thought, I'm never going to do this again. And I just threw a big pity party for myself the whole afternoon. But for whatever reason, the story of Verdi came to my mind. Verdi was the great Italian operatic composer. And he had a magnificent talent that was discovered when he was a young man. In fact, he was commissioned to compose three operas. He was on top of the world. He was married to the woman that he adored. He had two beautiful little children, and he was doing a work that he loved. And then within a period of 2 months, first he lost one child, and then he lost the other child, and then even his wife died. And yet he had this opera that he was under contract to compose. So he pushed through the grief, and he composed the opera, and it bombed. He said, I will never pick up a pen and write another note of music. Well, fortunately for the world, after a period of healing, when he was approached to write another opera, he did do it, and it was the first in a long line of brilliant successes. Well, thinking about this story did three things for me. The first thing was there's something about sharing emotion. Just understanding that somebody felt discouraged like I was feeling just completely dissipated the emotion. The second thing that happened is it put what I was going through in perspective. I hadn't lost anybody. It wasn't that big of a deal. It put it in perspective. But the third lesson is one that I find over and over as I read the story of great lives, that the darkest part of night is just before dawn. That more successes were preceded by failures than by successes. And that as we fail and we pick ourselves up and keep going, we do have those successes. And remembering that story made it possible for me to say, you know what? I can do this again. I don't in any way compare myself to Verdi. But when you see somebody else who has gone through something more difficult than you have, you say, if he can do it, I can too. There's an old saying that says, what's down in the well comes up in the bucket. Our kids cannot draw from a story that's not in there. The opposite of fear, opposite of hope is fear. Fear is paralyzing and immobilizing. When we give our children an abundance of stories to draw from, then no matter what life throws at them, rejection, isolation, losing a loved one, failure, anything life gives them, they have a story to draw from that will help them get through and show the way through. What happens to people who try to function on a puddle of stories, which would mean somebody that just goes by the limited view of their own experience? Well, I think we see what happens in the news every day. You read, you see examples of people who are trapped in raw emotion that they can't make sense of, and they take desperate measures to find their way through. Giving our children an abundance of stories will be a great source of hope to them. We will see a new generation of strong moral courage. Much of the sorrow and suffering of our world can be traced back to the breaking of a moral law. Corruption, dishonesty, greed, infidelity, selfishness, excessiveness, these are all behind many of the problems that our nation is facing. John Adams warned, the only foundation of a free constitution is pure virtue, and if this cannot be inspired into our people in a greater measure than they have it now, they may change the rulers and the forms of government, but they will not obtain a lasting liberty. A lot of people right now are crying to get back to a small government, but where's the other side of that equation that says only a people who are capable of governing themselves are capable of living in freedom? If we want our children to grow up to be good, we've got to show them what good looks like, and we need to make good look appealing to them. We learn a lot from the Native Americans. They never told their children to do anything without first showing why it was important and what it looked like in a story. And a lot of those stories were connected to nature so that wherever they looked, they were reminded of these stories. And when you study their culture, you find a people of strong moral courage, of a great respect for elders and honor. They're a wonderful example of this principle in action. Morality cannot be forced on our children. It cannot be legislated. It cannot be instilled by a system of rewards and punishments. Morality has to be chosen by individual hearts. And when it's hearts you're trying to get at, it's a story. They need to see the story so they have something to choose from. The effect of this method is demonstrated in a story that was left by one of these storytellers, an experience. She said that she'd gone to a friend's house one day to visit, and when she walked in the door, she could hear her little six-year-old son, John, upstairs throwing a major temper tantrum. He was throwing and screaming and kicking things, and the mother explained that he had disobeyed her one too many times, and she'd sent him to his room without his supper. Well, the storyteller asked if she could go upstairs and see what she could do, and the mother thought it wouldn't do any good, but, you know, sure, go ahead. So she walked up the stairs, and when she got in the room, she found John curled up at the foot of the bed in a heap. He didn't even look up at her as she walked into the room. And she sat down, and she said, "I think I'll tell you a story. Of course, you don't even need to listen to me. Away up in the far north where it's very, very cold, there lived a little boy who had a sled. Now, he didn't pull his sled with a rope. Oh, no, he had four little dogs he hitched up to the sled, and how they would fly over the snow." By this time, John had quit kicking, and he turned around and was looking at her. Slowly and quietly, the storyteller unfolded the story of little Jimmy Standby of Labrador, who had stood by the dogs all through the night and through the day in the bitter cold because he had promised Dr. Grenfell he would stand by. It was a wonderful story, and as the story progressed, John crept closer and closer to the storyteller until he'd climbed up in her lap, and his face was eagerly looking in her face to follow Jimmy to the very end. When the story ended and the storyteller stood up to go, the little boy said, "Will you please ask my mother if I can go downstairs? I need to tell her something." And the mother reluctantly agreed. And John walked down his dirt-streaked little red face. And he walked up to his mother, looked into her eyes, and he said, "She's told me a really nice story. And I just wanted you to know I'm going to have a name like his. I'm going to be Jimmy Standby, too." And he walked upstairs like a man. Not every story we tell our children will take root, any more than not every seed we plant sprouts and grows. And there are also a lot of people who are planting stories in the hearts of our children. But the one thing I can guarantee you, you will never harvest fruit from a seed that is never planted. We will see a new generation of patriots. No people in the history of the world has managed to hold on to freedom yet. When a nation is in crisis, when a nation has lost its way, it's the storytellers who will reset the course. During World War I, France bravely fought back the Germans for four brutal years. 20 years later, when World War II broke out, France fell to Nazi Germany in just 6 weeks. What made the difference? Well, much of the blame was placed directly on the shoulders of the teachers' unions, who, in a spirit of pacifism and internationalism, had purged all the school books of the stories of their fallen heroes, of their self-sacrifice and courage, and instead they replaced them with stories of the horrors of war and the suffering of French and German alike. How long will the battle for our freedom last? If we have only taught our children the mechanics of our Constitution and have failed to tell them the stories of what life looks like without freedom, if we have only taught them the workings of our government and have not told them the stories of the price paid to have that government, if we have not told our children the stories of what made America the light and hope of the world, then our battle for our freedom will not last long enough. Karl Marx once said, "A people without a heritage are easily persuaded." And Jefferson said, "A government is like everything else. To preserve it, we must love it. Love takes place in the heart. Hearts are fed by stories. Stories will heal our nation." We will see the hearts of generations woven together. A parent who is a storytelling parent changes from an authoritarian figure to a trusted friend, confidant, and advisor. It was on the front porches that stories that generations used to be woven together when the cousins and the brothers and the sisters and the aunts and the uncles and the grandparents would sit and tell the family stories. Yay! It was in those family stories that children came to get a sense of their identity and a feeling of belonging and a desire to honor the family name. If we restore those family stories, we will see hearts of generations woven together again. What will happen if we restore the art of storytelling in our homes again? I believe we will find out that the greatest generation is not behind us, that the greatest generation is yet to come. I believe in the power of stories, and I call on and hope that mothers and fathers will restore this beautiful art in our homes again today, especially mothers. We fancy that God can only manage his world with battalions when all the while he is doing it by beautiful babies. When a wrong wants righting, or a truth needs preaching, or a continent needs opening, God sends a baby into the world, perhaps in a simple home and of some obscure mother. And then God puts the idea into a mother's heart, and she puts it into the baby's mind, and then God waits. The greatest forces in the world are not the earthquakes and thunderbolts. The greatest forces in the world are babies. So I would like to pass along some of the storytelling basics that I have been learning from these wonderful, gifted storytellers of 100 years ago, in hopes that you will want to become storytelling artists in your home. It is all about heart, if you haven't gathered that yet. Storytelling is all about the heart. And I also have used the word art a lot, because that's what these storytellers used. And they defined art as the ability to lift someone up so that you can see life from a higher place. The word art is even found in the word heart. And to tell a story, it all begins with your heart. The difference between reading a story and telling a story is that when you read a story, you are reading someone else's words. But when you tell a story, it is being filtered through your own heart. And so the storyteller said that the first responsibility is to nourish your own heart with what is good and worthwhile, so that you are telling a story from a heart that is rich and full. And also to love the story that you're going to tell. If the story doesn't touch you in some way, it's probably not worth taking the time to prepare it for telling. Wait until you find a story that does touch your heart. After you've decided on the story that you want to tell, and you've gone through it several times, close the book and close your eyes and envision the story playing it out. Play it like a movie in your mind. Because when you tell a story, you do not tell a story from memorizing words. You're going to tell it from the images that you have in your mind. And the clearer that you can see that, the more the listener is going to be able to also see what you're seeing. Picture yourself standing in front of the living room window, and you're trying to describe what you can see across the street to the person that's sitting behind you. You tell the stories from the images. And then, know where your story is heading. Determine in your mind what the destination is, which is the climax of the story, and then aim for that destination. This is the problem with grandpa stories. When he starts out and he says, "I remember back in 32, well, maybe it was 33, let's see, I think we had a Ford, well, let's see, John liked the Fords," and by then you don't care about it, and he just goes on rambling. You want to know where your story is going, because stories The telling of stories is all about action. That's what rivets the listener to what you're saying. From the very first sentence, you grab their attention and they're saying, what happened? And then what happened? And then what happened? And then what happened? Until you get to the end of the story. And when you know where you're going, then you can get rid of all the unnecessary details that aren't bringing you there. In a written story, you have the luxury of long descriptive passages and you can take detours. You don't have that luxury in storytelling. You need to keep focused on where you're heading and keep the story moving along. When you're ready to tell the story, if you want to touch a heart, don't wing it. Take time to rehearse it out loud somewhere, in the shower, while you're exercising, while you're driving to the store, because it's only when you tell it out loud that you find out if there's still gaps in this story. There's nothing that's more of a story killer than to say, now, what happened, or, oh, I forgot to tell you. You need to make sure that you have rehearsed it so that it just flows naturally. My daughter tried to tell the story of the ugly duckling to her little girl. She thought, I know this story, and it wasn't until she got in the middle of it that she realized there were a lot of details that weren't clear in her mind. So don't skip this step. And then when you're ready to tell the story, just jump right in and tell it. Start with that first attention-grabbing line that's going to rivet them to what you're going to say next, an opening line that will grab their attention. If you think about some of your favorites, like, there was once a great king named Midas who cared about nothing but gold, gold, gold. Or it was a bitter cold night, and the little match girl blew in her hands and stomped her feet as she wandered up and down crying, matches, matches, who will buy my matches? Any child who has ever felt cold will not be able to turn away from that story until he finds out what happened to her. And as you tell the story, resist the temptation to ask questions to hold their attention. To ask a question to see if they're still paying attention is like pulling a kite down out of the sky to see if it's still soaring. The answer is, it isn't. When you ask a question like, what do you think is going to happen next? Or, what would you do? You may get some really clever answers, but you've completely disrupted the emotional flow of the story. And story is about emotion. Questions are for the mind and the intellect. Stories are for the heart and feeling, and they're two different methodologies that usually don't mix well at the same time. Any questions? Thank you for supplying that. That's right. They get caught up in the emotion of it. So keep the questions to a minimal. And then when you get to the end of the story, stop. Stop. There was a little girl that couldn't quite figure out how to end her stories. And so she would just keep going on and on and on. So she finally created this little device that she used on every story. And it was, and one beautiful morning they all got up, and while they were walking down the path to the front gate, they all died. That's actually a better ending to a story than, now what do we learn from this story? Or what we learn from this story is, complete silence will do more to drive the meaning of a story into a heart than anything you can possibly say, because the feelings of the heart can't always be expressed in words, and you need to give the heart a chance to work through what it's feeling. That's why bedtime is such a great time for storytelling, because the lights are low, your children are in a calm, receptive state of mind, and what better way for them to drift off to sleep than savoring all the emotional tingle of knights in shining armor from the days of chivalry, or of noble deeds of noble men and women, or of all those happily ever afters. By remembering hearts, you will be well on your way to becoming storytelling artists. But keep in mind that no artist ever painted a masterpiece on the very first try. Now, you may be saying to yourself, that's a lot of work just to prepare one story. The thing about a well-told story is that you never use it just once, because when you tell it, the immediate response is, will you tell it to me again? When you go see a movie the first time, you're watching to see what happened. But when you go back the second time, you go back because you want to relive all those feelings that you felt the first time. So first of all, you get multiple uses out of your stories. And as you store these stories as images, this is going to be yours for years to come. You're going to use it for grandkids and nieces and nephews and classes. And I'm a dreamer. I would love to see an army of storytellers who will take stories to children who have no one in their lives to tell stories to. The other thing you may be saying is, you know, it's just so much easier to just read a story. I will just pass along. Well, there will always be a place for reading with our children. That's important. But I'll just pass along the advice of these storytellers to reluctant storytellers. They said, tell the stories 1,000 times, put down the books, and tell the stories. So, last thing that we need to think about is, what story shall I tell? For the youngest listeners, this is the time for familiar stories. They love just the musicality of words. And so start out with Mother Goose and poetry. Robert Louis Stevenson's Child's Garden of Verses, thank you, it was in there somewhere, is a long-standing favorite. Reading the King James Bible out loud, you know, we started a little bit late. Can I just go maybe 5 minutes? Okay. The King James Version of the Bible is rich and beautiful language. Scholars say this was like the peak of the English language. No child is too young to listen to those words. It's starting to prime them to listen to great things later on. And then as you're ready to start giving them stories, they love things that are familiar to them. They understand cats and dogs and horses and mommies and babies. So Aesop's Fables is a good one. It's stories about animals. They're short. You don't have to worry about the morals. They will get those later. And then the repetitive stories, the three little bears, the three little pigs, the three billy goats Gruff. You're seeing a pattern here for three-year-olds. You will not get away with changing those stories. It has to be, someone's been eating my porridge, and I'll huff and I'll puff. They love the familiarity of it, and they will want to hear those over and over and over again. Ages 5 to 8, we move into the imaginative years. These are the years when they have keen imagination, and it's a perfect time for folk and fairy tales. Fairy tales awaken a sense of wonder, and they set dreams in motion. You know, it's the dreamers that move the world forward, not the realists. When a dreamer took the idea of the steam-powered locomotive to a group of experts in England, the experts rejected it because they said human beings could not possibly withstand the vast speeds of 15 miles per hour. Fortunately, there were dreamers here, and the rest is history. Einstein said, if you want to raise a scientist, first, give him fairy tales. Second, give him fairy tales. Third, give him fairy tales. Avoid the gory, gruesome ones. Those kind of came later. And also, watch out for fractured fairy tales. The traditional fairy tales have endured for a long time because they contain a kernel of truth. The story of Cinderella has been found in cultures all over the world. It's a great story of forgiveness. But did you notice Drew Barrymore's version in Ever After, where at the end she has that glint of sweet revenge in her eyes and the stepmother and stepsister get their just rewards? That's contrary to the traditional one, where, like Joseph in Egypt, Cinderella frankly forgave those who wronged her and invited them to live in the palace. This is also the time to start introducing stories from Greek mythology. So let me just quickly go through. Ages 8 to 12 is the time for heroes. Our kids need heroes. Start with the legends and the epics because it's a bridge between fancy and fact. Then add stories of great lives, scientists, explorers, inventors, writers, artists, musicians, leaders, humanitarians. Ages 12 and older are the time for purposeful stories, the heroes that endure and suffer and live for a principle. These are the heroes of moral courage. And also a time to introduce stories of romance, how our kids need stories of true love to counter all those stories of true lust that are out there. as you use the classic stories, the reason that I suggest starting with classic stories is because their original form was oral. Let me go back to the heroes for just a second, because, you know, finding stories of heroes that are inspiring is getting harder to do. About 75 or 80 years ago, biographers got this bright idea to start pulling our heroes off their pedestal and expose all their flaws and weaknesses and make them look just like us. I did a class for a group of women, and I told them the story of Florence Nightingale, and I told them how she brought so much comfort to those soldiers in the Crimean War that they would kiss her shadow as she passed by them. And one of the women wanted to go learn more about her, so she went to Barnes & Noble and picked up a book. And when I saw her a few weeks later, she said, "Well, she's not all she's cracked up to be, is she?" And I thought, are you kidding? This woman that literally wore out her life in service, to the point that she spent the last 50 years in bed, that much of the work that she did in changing the face of nursing was done from her bed. This was an amazing woman. And I just can't believe that we changed these stories. Yes. That's a very good question. And what I have found, I go back to that golden age. You will find real treasures if you go to children's literature written between 1880 and 1920. If you go to internet archives, you can find these books. That's what I'm pulling together in Libraries of Hope, which we are here. That's a treasure, and they wrote to inspire, and that's the big difference.
What were those dates again?
1880 to about 1920. You just are a lot safer with those classics. They just wrote from a different point of view. I mean, no one's safe. I went into the bookstore. I was trying to find a book on George Washington for my little granddaughters, and then I pulled out a book and I opened it up, and on the first page it said, "George Washington never liked his mother. She was a cold, bossy woman." So I turned the page and it says, "And so he went off to the French and Indian War," and in parentheses it said, "And he was probably really glad to get away from his mother." And then I turned again. We know he didn't like his mother because he addressed all his letters to "Honored Madam" instead of "Dear Mom." And I thought, really? Go back to the classics, and you will find a lot of heroes to inspire your kids with. If you go much before 1880, I'm just going to warn you, though, that when they first started writing for children, they thought that the blunt, direct approach was a great way to go. So you run into stories like this. Jane North was an idle little girl who didn't like her book. And when she was told to read her lesson, she would cry and say she wanted to play with her dolls. So her doll was taken from her until she did her lessons. But she read ill and would not write. So she grew up a dunce, and no one loved her. But you know, that may be effective, I don't know. Let's see, so going back, so this is just a brief guideline of stories that are appropriate. You know, this isn't in stone, but just as a guideline of stories of different ages that will be appealing to them. The Bible is a wonderful resource of stories because it has all of these. For the little children, you have stories of gardens and suns and moons and baby Jesus and baby Moses. For the imaginative, you have angels coming and bringing good messages, like good fairies, and you have miraculous deliverances in impossible situations. It's full of heroes, Gideon and Joshua and Deborah, and heroes of moral courage, Job and Esther. Just a great resource. And as you use these classic stories, it will provide a perfect storytelling tutorial for you. So you'll start to look at other stories around you, and you will be able to adapt them for retelling. As human beings, we love to tell stories, and the wonderful thing about telling stories to children is they are very receptive and very forgiving. It's a joy to tell stories to children. One of these storytellers said, "I would rather be a teller of stories to children than to be the queen's assistant or serve on the king's court." Enjoy the journey, and understand that as you search out stories to warm their hearts, you're going to be warming your own heart. So there's one question left. Is it worth it? My original storytelling friend, Margaret Eggleston, was asked this question, and she answered it with a story, of course. She told of a time that she had a group of adolescent boys that she was teaching, and there was one young man in there that was a hoodlum. They really called them hoodlums back then. And she said that she didn't think he was paying any attention to what she was saying, but she told them a story. And the story she told them was of a young boy who had a job working in a bank, sweeping up and cleaning up at the end of the day. And one day when he went to take the trash out, when he looked at the bottom of the trash can, there was a large roll of money that had somehow accidentally gotten thrown away. And as he picked it up and held it in his hands, he started to think of what this would mean to his family. His father was a drunk. He never brought home money for food. John worked at the bank because he was trying to get food for himself and for his mother, who was very ill. She was so ill that the doctor said if he didn't find a way to get medicine for her or to get her out to the country for fresh air, she would probably be gone by the fall. He looked around. Nobody had seen him take the money. It was going to be thrown away anyway. So he put the money in his pocket and he started for home. And as he walked, the money felt heavier and heavier in his pocket. He took it out and he put it in his side jacket pocket and continued walking, and then moved it to his inside jacket pocket until finally he said, "I can't keep this money." So he turned around, went to the bank. The security guard let him in. He walked straight to the bank president's office, knocked on the door, walked in and threw the money across the desk to the bank president and explained how he came by it. The president looked at him. He was shocked. He said, "Son, I know how much this money would mean to you and your mother. Nobody knew you had it. Why did you bring it back?" And without hesitating, he leaned across the desk and, looking the president in the eyes, said, "Sir, as long as I live, I have to live with myself, and I don't want to live with a thief." That was the story. She didn't think this young boy was listening, and she lost contact with them until years later she got a letter from him. He was serving as a soldier on the war front in France. And he wrote this letter and said, "Years ago, on a wet, rainy day, when the ice was dangerous on the sidewalk, you told a story to a group of boys. I don't remember the details of the story, but I remember how it ended. As long as I live, I have to live with myself, and I don't want to live with a thief." He said, "That one story has kept me from lying and from stealing and from losing courage. And here in France, it has kept me true to my manhood. I have a group of men here in my barracks. I know you will find that hard to believe, but many of them need this story. In fact, I want it for all of my men. For all that I am, I owe to this one story, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart." Never underestimate the power of a story. Stories shape our lives. What would happen if we restored the art of storytelling in our homes? Wouldn't you like to find out? Thank you all for coming. And are there any questions I can answer? I'm just going to mention, I'm doing a vendor workshop that was supposed to be tomorrow afternoon, but they scheduled me at the same time as my presentation, so I'm bumped up to 9:45 in the morning. If any of you want to come see the stories that we've been gathering and we've got together. And you had a question back here. Does anyone have an answer to that? She's asking a good way to collect family stories, such as when prayers are answered. Has anybody had a really effective way that you have done that?
Have a journal, and it's in our front room, and it's just a spiral journal, and if a miracle happens, we call it our miracle journal. But, and so, yeah, and we just keep it, and we've taught our girls, you don't write out the story, you just write a couple words to remind you of how it went.
And then do you say it was share those?
No, we're really random. We just, maybe for a family night, we get it out, but it's
What a wonderful.
So
that's
really
wonderful.
And it's amazing. You just write down three words and can remember.
It's an art that's it's been used throughout history. We're the ones that have lost out because we're losing that. That stories are so much more vibrant and alive than the written words. And it makes a huge difference. I talk to people all the time that have storytelling traditions in their homes. And it is huge. The difference makes such a difference. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up because that was part of the, I skipped over a part. Now I'm sitting here trying to backtrack. There are very gory, gruesome fairy tales that got written later. And definitely I would not tell those. I would look for the ones that reward good and have, they love it, that the underdog comes out on top and that fairies are helpful and good. I definitely, Charles Dickens tried to get fairy tales in the schools and he thought teachers would be selective and they weren't. And they were telling those gruesome stories and there was kids were getting violent and he realized the harm in that. So definitely you need to screen those. As far as the oral stories, when I say the folk and the fairy tales, that was the other part I didn't get to talk about. Stories that are written have to be reworked before they can be told. And so when I say classic stories, a lot of the folk tales, the mythology, the epics, the legend, those were preserved for hundreds of years just by being told and passed down from generation to generation. And those are the good stories to start when you're starting to tell because they're already in a telling format, if that makes sense. Yes. That's what I've been spending the last several years digging up are those stories, and that's what we're trying to gather together and get republished so that we can get them back into families' hands. Lang's fairy tales. There's a lot of good ones in there. I think the blue fairy tale book is the. Yeah. The Have you looked at Lang?
Perrault's fairy tales is a French author.
Right. Yes. I know, there's some really awful ones. Yes. Perrault, Perrault. Yeah. Yeah, you have to be selective for sure. I don't want to make you late to your last class. I'm happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.